The NFL is back. Our long national nightmare has begun again. That's where we'll begin on this week's Three Stories You Should Know. Joining me this time around are Shira Springer of the Boston Globe and ESPN's Don Van Natta. Welcome back to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bill.
Don, we're going to start with you and the aforementioned NFL. Go ahead.
Well, the 2016 NFL season kicked off Thursday night. It was a rematch of Super Bowl 50. Was decided by 1 point, and there were troubling questions about whether the NFL's new concussion protocol was followed after Panthers quarterback Cam Newton suffered a helmet-to-helmet hit in the fourth quarter but didn't leave the game. The broadcast was a microcosm of everything we love and are perhaps made to feel uncomfortable about the unstoppable, indestructible NFL. And, you know, Will Leach in New York Magazine this week had a terrific piece that argues by staying silent on so many controversies, Roger Goodell and the NFL have managed to do just fine and weather PR storm after PR storm. Leach's piece raises the larger question about if, not necessarily when, the league will ever see any erosion in its popularity. So the question is, will any of the bad headlines ever make Americans stop caring about professional football? Or put another way, do all of those bad headlines actually help fuel the NFL's popularity?
Well, I still remain firmly in the when, not if camp. However, I think that the timeline is not 10 or 15 or 20 years. I think we're looking at a 50 or 60 year timeline. When you start to have a groundswell of parents of potential youth football players really saying, no, my son is not going to play football, it will happen, and it'll happen from the bottom up.
This past week, gigantic, potentially gigantic lawsuit against Pop Warner and some of the other youth football leagues. And if that does, in fact, become a class action suit, then that is going to dry up sooner rather than later. Don, I would take issue with just one thing you said. Troubling questions about the NFL concussion protocol. No. There are no questions. The protocol is a public relations gimmick and ongoing. We shouldn't expect anybody to be subject to it unless they are third-string people who have wandered onto the field by mistake. Don, have we changed your initial approach or attitude in any way?
No, I'm sorry, guys. I mean, I hear what Shira is saying, and I think 50 to 60 years is the minimum that we'll see an erosion in popularity. As long as the game is hardwired to the must-see TV culture of the United States, nostalgia, fantasy sports, gambling, you know, even patriotism, I think we'll see the league's revenues and ratings continue to skyrocket. People just love the game, and I don't see any end to the party.
I would like to turn the discussion towards college football. I recently finished reading a terrific book titled Unsportsmanlike Conduct by Jessica Luther, in which the author writes about how the worst aspects of the culture of college football may be changed. She says, among other things, that coaches, athletic directors, and university presidents have got to take responsibility for their part in creating and sustaining a culture, an environment in which players feel entitled to break the law and get away with harassment, assault, and even rape. I bring this up this week because former Baylor head coach Art Briles apologized to victims of sexual assault by players that Briles was coaching at Baylor. He seemed to acknowledge, at least in part, his failure as a leader in that context. And I'm just wondering if maybe Briles is not simply campaigning for another job. Maybe his acknowledgement, quote, "I did wrong," indicates a glimmering little bit of a light of progress. I don't know. I like to think so. Don, what do you think?
I'm far more cynical than you.
I was afraid of that.
I'm right there with you, Don. I'm right there with you.
I had to put it out there. What can I tell you?
To me, he didn't go nearly far enough for what the sins were here. And it just felt like an engineered first step of a contrition tour to get another job. I didn't believe it. The sincerity and the authenticity of his statement just didn't register for me. I think Briles has got, you know, more apologizing to do before any of us are going to believe him.
I agree with you completely, Don. This is all about rehabilitation and getting his next job. I mean, listen, he's 60 years old. He knows he doesn't have a lot of time to waste before he can go and pursue or be pursued for another head coaching job. And you know what? I wouldn't be surprised if next fall at this time, we are talking about him as the head coach of a major Division I program somewhere in the country.
The only thing that made me feel this might be the real thing, he didn't say, I apologize if I've offended anybody. He apologized directly to the victims of the assaults and the rapes. And that, to me, is a little, just a tiny little bit different from what a lot of these other folks have done in similar positions.
True.
So
I'm
just inclined to mention that. Shira, you have returned recently from the Olympics in Rio, and I understand you are still thinking about some of the games that were being played there.
Yeah, I'm thinking about them, but I'm not sure many people around the country are thinking about them, and that's the Paralympics. They're going on right now in Rio de Janeiro, and despite hopes for a record-setting TV audience this time around, the Paralympics are very much an afterthought in the sports world. But it doesn't have to be that way. Why not hold the Paralympics before the Olympics? It makes sense from a practical perspective and from a promotional perspective. On the practical side, there are roughly 6,000 fewer athletes from 40 fewer countries competing in about 6 fewer sports. So with the Paralympics first, organizers could see how the venues, the security checkpoints, the transportation, the food supply, signage, etc., all works. On the promotional side, I don't think there's any event in sports that's tougher to follow than the Olympics.
Don, you like flipping the two spectacles?
I think it's a no-brainer. I love the idea, as Shira pointed out, and her great column laying it out, I think makes just an excellent argument for it. And I was stunned. Well, maybe I wasn't stunned. Maybe I was not surprised that the IOC said, we like things just as they are.
I mean, they're getting rich.
That's right. How do they justify that, Shira? That was one question I had. It makes no sense.
I'm right there with you. It's such a no-brainer. It's so frustrating talking about it because the sports are great. The competition is compelling. And the world should be watching, and it's not.
Also, practically speaking, the Paralympics have to go up, as you pointed out, against the opening of the college and pro football season here in the United States, the Premier League in the UK, and soccer leagues all over Europe. If it's in late July or early August, it's a deader time on the sports calendar, too. So it makes sense from that perspective.
Maybe staging the Paralympics first would make a difference. My guess is that the two spectacles appeal to two different and separate audiences, and I don't really know if changing the order would make a big difference. Shira, I just don't understand why you're not still there in Brazil. That's my only question.
Well, actually, I would have loved to have stayed.
My guests for this week's Three Stories You Should Know have been ESPN's Don Van Natta and Boston Globe's Shira Springer. Thanks to both of you.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Bill.